This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Douglas took the risk of confiding in Ruby and telling her the truth about his illicit relationship with Frank.
Downstairs, the salon bell tinkled, and Madam hurried past with her short, rapid steps, almost soundless on the staircase. Mechanically, Ruby resumed stitching one bead after another onto the white satin and began ruminating about the events of the previous day, the way Douglas had confided in her. It hadn't occurred to her that men might talk that way, that a man might need someone else to know the tenderness of his heart. There were few men she didn't detest. Most of them were a kind of lower species, enslaved by their biological mechanism that was nothing more than a pump, sending blood through their veins and organs and into their sexual apparatus. She shuddered. The instant the needle pierced the side of her forefinger, she let the hat drop onto the table. A garnet bead of blood on her finger, a streak of blood on the white satin. Aghast, Ruby sucked her finger.
What happened?
Edie bit her lip when she saw the red mark. I'll run down and get a wet cloth. I might be able to sponge it off. Dabbing at it made it worse. Diluted, the blood spread to a pink blotch. There was nothing for it. Ruby knocked on the blocking room door. Janice examined the bride's headpiece. Yeah, it's ruined all right. Next time, as soon as you see blood on white material, rub it off with your spit. You have to do it immediately, though. I don't know why it works, but it does. Neutralizes blood or something. It's an old milliner's trick. I'm afraid you'll have to tell Madam about the satin. I hope it's not bad luck. For the bride, I mean. Ruby's head pounded. She'd been a bit too pleased with herself, hadn't she? What if worse was to come? Edie was eager to see how dramatic Madam's reaction might be.
Are you going to be in trouble? Edie asked with interest.
Never you mind, just carry on counting things. As Ruby headed to the stairs, she heard a bottle of beads tip over. Downstairs, she listened for voices in the salon, not wanting to interrupt Madam with a customer. Hearing nothing, she cautiously parted the drape. By the shop door, Madam had her arms around a woman, kissing her on both cheeks. She held the woman's face in her hands, spoke in a language Ruby hadn't heard before.
Mirupaf shimedashur.
Whatever those words meant, it had a tone of tender endearment. The bell tinkled as Madam opened the door for her to leave. Ruby stepped forward when the door clicked shut.
Excuse me, madam.
Her employer lifted her chin, her eyes rimmed with tears.
Yes,
she said, leading Ruby back behind the drape to her little studio.
I'm sorry. I've ruined the bride's hat.
You pricked your finger, said madam, running a white handkerchief under her nose. It is a small thing.
Janice told me about the spit, but it was too late. I tried.
Such things happen.
Madam cut a strip of sticking plaster for Ruby's finger.
Thank you, but the bride...
Say nothing more about it.
Madam reached under the cloth that surrounded the table and drew out a box.
Every eventuality is considered before it happens.
She produced a white satin replica of the hat Ruby had ruined.
For an important order, I always prepare two, but only two. So, now you will concentrate on your work. Leave that young man behind.
That young man? What about the ruined one? Said Ruby.
Take the beads off with care. Put it aside.
Ruby took the stairs slowly. She was not looking forward to morning tea time and facing Janice's relentless chatter and Edie's need for attention. There was a place in the pit of her stomach where shames and humiliations fell and accumulated like pebbles in a tin. Ruining the hat added another one. Her mind had been on Douglas instead of her work. What on earth did he think of her? Her running around the park in a flap, panicking and yelling for Edie the way she had yesterday. She wouldn't blame him for thinking her completely neurotic. Was she? But what mother lets her kid run off in a strange place? A wave of exasperation crossed her, and she cast a scowl at Edie. It was her fault. What if Douglas was now having second thoughts about her housekeeping for Frank? Janice was pouring tea.
Ready for a cup of tea?
I'd rather work. I've got to make up time.
Ruby rubbed the back of her neck. The plaster on her finger hampered her work, and she was in no mood for idle chat.
What did you do in the weekend?
Janice's cup rattled on its saucer.
I got car sick, said Edie.
Oh? Whose car? Go on, spill the beans, said Janice. I thought you didn't know anyone here. Or have you got a secret boyfriend?
Mum's friend's name is Douglas, said Edie.
Ruby dropped her work.
Stop it, Edie!
She tried not to shout.
You're gossiping, and I won't have it!
Edie drew her lips together.
Hey! Janice's voice was gentle. Don't be like that.
You can bloody well mind your own damned business, Janice. I'm going to the loo.
With that, Ruby ran down the stairs. To hell with trying to keep quiet. Out by the lemon tree, she tore off a handful of leaves and crushed them in her fist, filling her nostrils with the scent. She took deep breaths, willing herself to regain some equilibrium.
My dear.
It was Madame. Ruby didn't want to face her.
Come, let us have a little coffee, Madame said behind her.
The steaming black liquid was poured into the tiny cups. Madame sat erect on the edge of her seat, ankles crossed. Nothing was said, and Ruby was grateful for it. After the second cup of hot, bitter coffee, everything seemed to settle within her. Finally, Madame got to her feet and took the empty cup and the saucer.
Go up now. You have things to mend. Then do your work.
Upstairs, Edie nuzzled into Ruby's embrace.
Sorry, Mum. I promise I'll never gossip again.
Ruby patted her daughter's back. It was too much to expect.
I'm sorry, she soothed. Sorry I flared up like that.
I know,
said Edie simply. In the blocking room, Janice put down her tools and fanned steam away from her face.
I'm sorry, Janice, said Ruby. You didn't deserve that.
Oh, it's all right, said Janice, smiling with no sign of rancor.
I've lived my whole life with Beryl, don't forget. You should see how ratty she gets when she's on edge. Anything I can do?
What a brick Janice was. Is that invitation to come to your house-minding place still open? Janice flew around the bench and latched onto her in a crushing hug.
You really mean it? Tonight?
Yes, I'd like to.
said Ruby. It might cheer Edie up too.
Janice spread herself in an armchair, her arms dangling over the sides. She threw her head back with laughing mock exasperation. I had to read her 3 stories before she fell asleep. She snuggled up with Poppy. I must remember to put that cat out before I go to bed, or I might have poo to clean up first thing. That reminds me, you'd better not leave anything black lying anywhere, or you'll have cat hair all over it.
Ruby flapped out the damp creases of the tea towel printed with a picture of a Maori chieftain's head and hung it over the oven door to dry.
You might find being Auntie Janice hard work. Edie's going to take advantage of you.
Nonsense! I so wish I had a little girl.
If you ever want to sell her. If humans had hackles, Ruby's would have been on end. She scratched the back of her scalp. Janice had no idea. God almighty. Still, Janice didn't have a bad bone in her.
Is she asleep now?
Unless she's pretending, said Janice. She looked asleep. You know how she has her mouth open? Is that adenoids?
I don't know.
They can take them out, you know.
I've put the kettle on. Not sure where the tea is.
In that fancy tin in the pantry. I have to say, your rissoles were delicious. Divine. And you've finished the washing up.
Janice didn't move.
It was nothing. They were meatballs, said Ruby. Hardly divine. But I'm glad there was thyme in the garden. Where did you learn to cook like that?
Oh, you pick it up.
I never have, said Janice. This? You being here with me? This is what's really divine.
Don't be silly. I'm glad I came. It was a good idea.
In spite of Janice's chirping, Ruby couldn't remember when she'd felt as relaxed as this. This was a sample of the life she wanted. Room to move, some silence, and it would be perfect.
Why not stay the rest of the week? Said Janice. Now you've seen what it's like. I can't. I might like to come again, but I don't know if I can. It depends.
Janice jumped up. Let's put a record on, she said. What would you like? There was no time to answer. They've got stacks of jazz, Janice went on. Wait on. Have you heard of Maria Callas? Oh, no. It says here it's opera. Not that. What's the Mikado? The needle had hardly picked up the tune before she lifted the gramophone arm with a groan of disgust and slipped the record back in its cover. Oh, I can't abide that sort of thing. Oh, look. This is better. Adina Washington. She's absolutely wonderful. Let's have this one.
Music flooded the room.
Oh, I adore it. Janice kneeled in front of the gramophone. Doesn't it just get you?
She swayed to the rhythm, her floral skirt spread out prettily around her.
Yes, said Ruby, watching the sensuous rotations of Janice's shoulders and the light on her skin.
Janice wrenched off her jumper and threw it, knotted up and half inside out, in the direction of the chair behind her. It missed. The strap of her apricot satin slip slid down her arm, and she left it there. There was a playful look in her eyes. Strands of chestnut shone in Janice's dark hair. Ruby was reminded of pictures of partially clad women she'd seen in art books. Were they the paintings of Renoir? Degas? Graceful, bare-limbed women, dancers at ease in their surroundings, well-fleshed arms and shoulders, and small, firm breasts, like fruit, painted in poses devised to make the viewer believe the women were oblivious to the artist's scrutiny. Ruby was not an artist. Janice was not oblivious. Their eyes met. Janice's eyes were alight with desire. Her lips parted in a half-smile. She lifted her arms, waving them invitingly. Ruby couldn't pretend that a warmth she kept buried hadn't unfolded in her. With effort, she pulled her gaze away.
"I know. Let's tell stories," said Janice, popping up. "For instance, how old were you when you had your first kiss?"
"Isn't there anything else we can play? Cards?"
"Oh, do let's tell stories." Janice clapped her hands. "Reading stories to Edie has put me in the mood. You first."
"Well, someone asked me for a kiss when I was 16.
"Asked for?" Janice giggled. "Who was it? How romantic. My cousin Jeffrey tried to pash me in the backyard when I was 14, but Dad saw him out the window and came out and gave him the hiding of his life. He wouldn't have thought of asking. He was a spotty pig. He went to the Solomons, I think. Didn't come home. I was so awful to him."
The record ended, and Janice leapt up to lift the needle off the track. Perhaps the butterfly in Janice's mind would land on a different line.
"So, tell me," she said, as she put the record into its sleeve and shuffled through the rest. "Who was this beau who wanted a kiss?"
"Lenny. His name was Lenny."
"And did you give Lenny his kiss?"
Janice's eyes narrowed cheekily. "I didn't get a chance."
"Were you caught?"
"Sort of." Ruby looked at the low flames of the gas heater in the hearth.
"Ooh, Billie Holiday. It's a sin to tell a lie. Perfect."
Janice had the record on before Ruby answered.
"Don't you think Billie Holiday's voice is like golden syrup when she sings this?" "Okay, go on. Tell me the whole story. I want details. Where did this unkiss with Lenny nearly happen?"
"My parents were on one of those appreciation social committees."
"He was American," Janice sat up. "What happened? Was this Lenny good looking? Tell, tell."
"He was. Quite exceptional."
"Pardon me, ma'am," he had said, with that accent, straight out of an American film. Not that Ruby had been to many films in her 16 years.
His cup of punch had slopped down her apricot-coloured frock onto her white sock. He looked about the same age as her older brother, who was away fighting the Japanese. This American was more handsome than all of them, with a clipped brush of blonde hair on top of his head, like the other doughboys. He'd produced a handkerchief and begun ineffectively mopping her front.
"It's all right," she had said. His smile was beautiful. "Exceptional."
She hadn't meant to say it out loud. He may not have heard her above the band, local and American musicians together, belting out the favourites. His head had tilted in query, like an unsure puppy. They exchanged names. Lenny's surname was incomprehensible. He asked her to dance.
"I don't know," she said. "I'll have to ask my mother. She's in the kitchen."
"Okie dokie, Ruby. I'll ask your mother's permission."
He knew his way to the kitchen, and he led her by the hand through the throng of dancers, sashaying as he went, which made her laugh. Her mother had wiped her fingers on her apron and wagged her finger.
"Just one dance, mind. I want you back here."
Ruby ran her hand backwards and forwards against the nap of the upholstery on the arm of the couch. Billie Holiday had stopped.
"Okay, then."
Janice lifted the arm of the gramophone and changed the record. "If you don't want to tell me the story of Lenny's missing kiss, we might as well dance.
I love this one."
She snapped her fingers, swiveling and sashaying across the floor.
"Oh, come on. I haven't danced for ages."
"I'll lead,"
she simpered as she tried to haul Ruby to her feet.
"No, Janice, I don't feel like it. Don't."
Janice left her and spun off into her own dance. All she needed was 7 veils. Ruby tossed her head back as Lenny spun her past the ladies and the girls who danced modestly with one another, and the boys from the secondary school, who made dancing look like a punishment. The Americans knew how to dance, taking up the floor and flinging girls about. In the corner, a huddle of Kiwi soldiers stood together, silent and surly with disapproval. The rhythm was infectious. She waggled her bottom and kicked her legs out, imitating some of the glamorous older girls who knew what they were doing. One girl flicked her skirt high enough to show her suspenders and her new American nylon stockings. Ladies shook their heads. Boys blushed. Men leered. Oh, but Ruby was the bee's knees with her American. When the tune changed to a slower 3-step, she found herself being waltzed near the fresh air and the open door. They danced past a row of local men and uniformed Kiwi soldiers, who cast desultory glances at the Americans as they leaned on the back wall smoking their spindly, hand-rolled cigarettes. They tossed remarks she didn't hear. Didn't want to hear. Lenny seemed oblivious, turning and dipping her. One of the locals spat on the floor in front of her, and she tossed her hair to show she didn't care a bit. Too bad if they chose to turn down the Americans' offer of packets of tailor-made Lucky Strikes. Too bad if they didn't know how to ask a girl to dance. Ruby had swung her hips saucily to show them how much she was enjoying herself as she smiled into Lenny's face. If her parents were looking for her, she didn't notice.
"Would you be kind enough to give me one kiss?" Lenny had said when they went to the door for air. "We're shipping out tomorrow."
Without knowing why, she felt suddenly sorry for him. For herself, too. Could first love only last 5 dances? The light from the door stretched a yellow trapezium across the gravel car park and reflected dully on the rows of cars. "I don't know." She knew she shouldn't. Anyone might see her, and word would get back to her parents. Her father wouldn't hesitate to give her a clout and bundle her off home.
"Come on," Lenny urged. "Just one kiss before I go. To remember you by."
One kiss seemed such a small thing. "Not here," she said, walking around the corner to where the ferns and vegetation were shadowy beyond the berm.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.